Mr. Mark's Classroom.
This is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership in childhood ministry.
Mr. Mark's goal is to resource you with tools, ideas, and a passion for leading kids to become lifelong followers of Jesus.
So let's get this episode rolling with the man that champions kids ministry today, Mr. Mark Jones.
Welcome, Landry Holmes. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. I told my wife, Janetta, this morning, I said, well, I'm going to Oklahoma today to lead a conference. She paused because I had been traveling quite a bit lately, and then she realized that I wasn't physically going to Oklahoma today. And then I was just in a meeting a while ago, and I said, well, I'm going to go lead a conference in Oklahoma. And somebody asked me if we had renamed our conference rooms. I can just see that there's people. I can't really tell who's there. So I'm just going to, unfortunately, I won't be able to see if you're sleeping or not, or, you know, anything like that. But, I'll hear you snoring if there is. But let me get started with this. This has been really an interesting topic, something that I wanted to share at Etch, and since even before I did it at Edge, I mean, I began, as soon as I indicated I'd like to do this kind of conference, it seems like everywhere I turn, there is another book or another article or, somebody talking about how distracted we are, and about how it is affecting kids and affecting their brains and affecting all of us and our brains. And, you know, and there's, so it's such a new thing that some of what we read today, they're going to refute tomorrow, or something I read yesterday will be refuted today. And but I've continued to gather some articles and got a new book sitting on it's in my backpack now, but it was sitting on my desk that kind of relates to this as well. And so I think that as far as kids are concerned, the verdict's still out of the effect all of our technology is going to have on them. So this session basically is just really trying to help us understand reality as far as how we as adults, and I'm really taking it from the standpoint of we as preschool and children's leaders and teachers and ministers in our churches are distracted. And we're teaching kids who are distracted. We could go on and on. We're trying to reach parents who are distracted, and we go to staff meetings where everybody is distracted. In fact, one of the primary books that I read in preparation for this takes a theological viewpoint of how our smartphones are changing us. And I read it and shared with my pastor, who happens to be my wife's. He's my wife's daytime boss, because my wife is on staff at a church as preschool minister, and so their staff goes to read books together, and they actually decided to read that book. And I'm hearing that it is, you know, as with me, it's kind of a convicting thing, but this whole topic to me is convicting. Recent research has indicated that goldfish now have a longer attention span than people. Now, the statement's been touted as true, but now it's been debunked as myth. So I don't know if it's true or not, but what I do know is that the picture of this lady with all this distraction is really the way where we are. And so I would, whether it's true or not, and whether the research is valid, I like to think it probably is pretty true that goldfish have longer attention spans than you and I do. Of course, how do I know that this fact has been debunked? Well, from Google, of course. And so, you know, is it truth? Is it myth? What does it matter? Well, what matters is that we can become so distracted very easily, and trying to track down the truth of this goldfish statement was a big distraction for me when I was trying to prepare for this subject. And so that experience, you know, to me is akin to reading an online product reviews. I don't know about you, but when I get something, like for me, especially if I get an iPad, when I got my new iPad, my first one several years ago, I spent, I don't know how many hours trying to decide what iPad case I wanted. And that was because I was perusing Amazon and reading all the reviews. The second iPad, because you know these things were out, my wife got for me and she pre-selected the case for me. So I didn't have to do that. But I spend way too much time when I'm trying to buy something. They say, you know, Amazon's great. You go to Amazon, you can buy anything you want to. Yeah, but then you have to read the reviews. And you go through the reviews, and one person says, this item's great. Another person says, it's the worst thing I've ever used. And again, all that leads to our distraction. Now, I am prone to distraction. I have not taken the official ADD test, but I've taken an unofficial one, and I'm probably pretty much right there with adult attention deficit disorder or something. But it's a good thing I'm in a room without a window because I would be very distracted. But when I was, you know, working on this presentation, I had 7 windows open on my computer screen. Fortunately, it was a big computer screen. I received this same pop-up message about my disk being full at least twice in the past few minutes while I was preparing. My iPhone was sitting to the left of my keyboard and my iPad was sitting to the right of my keyboard. And all that was going on. And then, of course, not to mention that any time that I've got my computer open or my iPad or my iPhone, people can chat with me through Google Hangouts. They can text me through my texting. They can call me. They can, there's just lots of ways. And we think that's great because we can get more done, but I think that it's not really great. So you think about the people that you really don't want to be distracted. You know, this is, I would not want my surgeon, especially, you know, my heart surgeon or any other surgeon to be distracted. I'm now noticing that when I'm, like if I'm driving through a parking area or driving through a where some streets might be blocked or there's some, I've noticed that there are policemen that are on their iPhones or, and I'm thinking, I just don't know how good it is for that police officer to be distracted like that. You know, we don't want firefighters or EMS technicians to be distracted. I don't know if it's kind of timely. Yesterday, a blog post that I wrote came out on Kids Ministry 101. I don't know if you use Kids Ministry 101, but there's podcasts and blogs. And I wrote part of what I wrote there is about distracted adults. And next month, I'm going to write more about distracted kids. But one thing that I wrote in there was, you know, from the minute I got up until probably I was going to go to bed that night, all the ways I use technology. In fact, I was actually writing the blog post on an airplane. But as I was going through security that day, I used my iPhone for my boarding pass. And I noticed that just as I was going through the second part of security, that the TSA officer pulled out her phone and was looking at it. You know, it's everywhere. We're just distracted. Distraction has always been with us. It's not really new. Some of us tend to be able to focus for longer periods of time than others. I've already admitted I'm not one of those people. But I feel like that technology has exacerbated the issue, or at least put a magnifying glass on the fact that often distracted adults are teaching distracted kids. And one reason we're so distracted, I believe, is our constant quest for information. You know, there was distraction in the past. I don't know if you can tell, they're listening to the radio and they have their gas mask in their hand. I guess they're getting ready for something big to happen. But this is kind of where we are today. You know, we are just always wanting information. There's a constant quest for information. I can remember just a few years ago, and it was after I was already out of the house and married and had kids, but my mother and my dad since passed away, but they live in Lubbock. Mother lives in Lubbock, Texas still. She's 92. But she always had a dictionary by the kitchen table. So if we ever had a question, you know, what she do? She picked up the dictionary. She's also an English major. But now what do? We pick up our phone real quick, our smartphone, our tablet, and, well, let me look that up. And we do that at the dinner table. We do that wherever we are because we just, you know, we kind of have this constant quest for information. And when you think about, do I really need to know everything there is to know about everything? Because nobody knows everything about everything anyway. You know, we want all the facts. Jen Wilkin wrote this in a recent Bible study. My wife shared some of this with me. She was going through the Bible study at the time. We want all the facts, but as finite beings, we are not designed to have them. Let that sink in a minute. We want the facts, but we're really not designed. God didn't design us to know everything about everything all the time. So she says, and so not surprisingly, unmeasured consumption of information brings us not increased peace of mind as we hoped, but increased dissonance. And I find this true. By the end of the day, I'm exhausted because I have been constantly jerking my attention from one thing to the other, from an email to a Google chat to a text to a brief conversation that's actually face-to-face to a phone call to a Zoom meeting to whatever it is. And even, we know that we should not be distracted drivers. I mean, that's a whole nother conversation about being a distracted driver. But what do we do now? We have hands-free texting in our cars and trucks and hands, you know, not just call. Now, if I ever talk to my mother on the phone and I'm driving home, I've got to be sure she knows that I am driving hands-free, or she will ask me and she'll probably hang up if she finds out I'm not doing it hands-free. But basically, our shortened, you know, as we think about how we're not designed for this, the results of information overload are irritability, anger, lethargy, listlessness, sleeplessness, elevated blood pressure, cardiovascular stress, digestive disorder, headaches, stomach pain, muscle pain, and vision problems. Shortened attention spans, diminished ability to concentrate, diminished ability to make decisions that manifest itself by inaction. Jen Wilkin listed all those. So if you're not depressed yet, you should be. But I want to help us not be. And here's the two questions that we're going to get into today. Is how can we as kids ministry teachers, leaders, ministers, become less distracted? And secondly, how can we leverage kids' distractions? Notice I didn't say how can we get rid of it. I'm trying to be realistic. How can we leverage kids' distractions in order to effectively teach them biblical truth? So first of all, let's talk about how we, you and I, can become less distracted. Nicholas Carr says, our smartphones have an unprecedented hold on our attention and vast influence over our thinking and our behavior. Now, if you have your smartphone with you, now, like I said, you're where I can't see, but if you have your smartphone with you, I ask that you take it out and place it in plain view right now. Take it out of your purse, take it out of where, your pocket, put it in plain view if it's not already, but turn it over so the screen is face down. So I'm going to do that right here, face down, and then I want you not to touch it for the next 30 minutes. You say, well, what if there's an emergency? Well, if there's an emergency within the next 30 minutes, they'll probably call so many times you're in there going to look at it. But try not to look at it for the next 30 minutes. Our phones offer us convenience and diversion. They breed anxiety. Their extraordinary usefulness gives them an unprecedented hold on our attention and vast influence over our thinking and behavior. That actually came from the Wall Street Journal. That's not even from somebody Christian. Think about the number of times we check our smartphones. About 81,500 times a year, or every 4.3 seconds. So if that's the case, think about how many times that you look at your smartphone when you're in a session with kids. The average Facebook user spends 50 minutes every day in the Facebook product line, Messenger, Instagram, Facebook, 50 minutes a day. That's 50 minutes. Now, I'm not going to condemn you because I do it too. I go through periods of time where I fast from Facebook for the most part. I'm going through a fast right now. I don't make a big deal about it. I just try to do something else. Let's look at it. But every now and then, like that blog post I told you about, I wanted to push it out so people would know it's there. I pushed it out through Facebook. My fast is not complete. But I have found sometimes that Facebook depresses me because it's all about everybody's lives on there are perfect, except for the one or two people that want to show you their surgery scars and those kind of things, and you realize that not everybody's life is perfect. So I'm not condemning Facebook. I'm just saying we need to realize that there are other things we could be doing with our time sometimes. Apple design chief Johnny Ive, speaking to the New Yorker editor, said that he just repeated his belief that we should limit the time we spend with our noses in our smartphones and stay engaged in real life. And so the reporter asked him, he said, what constitutes misuse of an iPhone? And he replied, perhaps constant use. And I'm mad about that. Oh, I picked it up, didn't I? Okay, I didn't look at it. But, I mean, if I'm standing at the gas pump putting gas in my truck, I'm looking at my phone. I mean, it's just constant. And that's not healthy. Using a smartphone or even hearing one ring or vibrate produces a welter distraction that makes it harder to concentrate on a difficult problem job. The division of attention impedes reasoning and performance. So let's say that you have your phone in your pocket and you're teaching children on Sunday mornings and you feel it vibrate and you know you shouldn't look at it, but you are getting stressed and your attention has just been diverted. I mean, it's happened to me as well. Smartphones have become so entangled with our existence that even when we're not peering or pawing at them, they tug at our attention, diverting precious cognitive resources, just suppressing the desire to touch this phone and check it that's right here beside me can debilitate our thinking. You know, and I don't know about you, but many times I think my pants are vibrating when they're not. I mean, that really is a thing for people. That's really weird. I read recently that Chris Pine purportedly uses a flip phone. I don't know if that's the case or not, but I tell you what, if you want to curb your looking at stuff all the time, just get your flip phone, because that would be good. But you can still stay connected. Now, my mother's 92. She has a flip phone, but she only turns it on when she's going to go, like, to the beauty shop. And so we never talk on her phone. Distractions are not new to us, but digital distractions are a more recent development. So why do we invite this digital distraction into our lives? Because we do invite it. It's not something that we're not forced to do. We think, oh, yes, I'm expected by my family. I'm expected by my boss. I'm expected by my pastor. I'm expected by... We make decisions every day whether or not be distracted digitally. And sometimes these are why we invite that distraction. This is a book that if you want to read anything about this, I would purchase this book or listen to this book, 12 Ways Your Phone is Changing You. It actually takes a theological Christian world viewpoint to keep work away, to keep people away, and to keep thoughts of eternity away. That's really scary. You know, he also talks about how we have trained our brains because of like Facebook to just scan things. Then when we read our Bibles, we just scan. And that, again, goes against God instructions to meditate on his word. And so, again, think about the next time you do reach for your smartphone. I mean, I'm not talking about when you need to make a call when you need to deal with this. I talk about when you pick it up just to scroll through Twitter or Facebook feed or, and play Candy Crush, because I know you do it. Some of you are probably doing it right now. Why do you do it? Do you do it so you don't have to talk to people? Do you do it so that, smartphone's a great tool for an introvert like me, because then I don't have to worry about talking to people. I just put my nose in the phone. To keep thoughts of eternity away. Why do we invite that? Well, I want to tell you that this is my belief and conviction, that there's nothing inherently evil about technology, about this computer I'm using. In fact, technology is a great tool. I think God is using this Zoom technology right now that we can connect, 1,000 miles apart from each other. There's nothing inherently evil about technology. It is not either evil or good, because smartphones, tablets, computers, technology is amoral. It's not moral or immoral, it's amoral. It's how we use them that is either for evil or for good, like any other tool. So one of the reasons that we like to stay so connected is because we try to be omnipresent now. But Jen Wogan said there's no such thing as omnipresence. The internet allows us to work remotely, she says. Our living rooms become two places at once, a workplace and a family place. We attend one church and podcast the sermons of another church. We FaceTime our kids while we're away on business trips so we can feel like we're still at home. We combine a trip to the pool with a trip to the mall, pursuing Amazon on our tablet while keeping an eye on the deep end. We call it multitasking or efficiency, she says. No matter how advanced we become, we can never be everywhere fully present. When we reach, she says, for omnipresence ourselves, we guarantee that we will be fully present nowhere. If we try to be present everywhere, we'll be fully present nowhere, she says. Will be spread thin, people divided attention, affections, efforts, and loyalties. Let's go to scripture. John says, though I have written many things to write to you, I don't want to use paper and ink. Instead, I hope to come to you and talk face to face so that I join in you complete. He could say, though I have many things to tell you, I don't want to use FaceTime and texting. Instead, I hope to come to you and talk face to face so that our joy may be complete. I hope you don't mind me taking a little bit of liberty with that. But his technology at the time was paper and ink. Ours is digital. Those are all good. In fact, texting and FaceTime are great ways that we use to keep up with our kids. We have, now Jeanette and I have two adult sons. We have two grandbabies. And I love having FaceTime for the grandbaby who lives in Louisville 2.5 hours away, because that way I can keep up with her better. But there's nothing that will take the place of when we get in our car and we drive 2.5 hours to Louisville and we get to talk face to face. Well, we talk, she kind of talks, she's 10 months old, to our little granddaughter. And, there's the only way to be fully present is to really be there for the kids we teach. Not too long ago, I was sitting in the block area in the 3 through pre-K Sunday school room, and somebody who had been one of my employees, was no longer my employee, but she was texting me about something, a concern about kind of prayer requests. She was having some issues. She texted me, and I pulled out my phone, and I was looking at it, and Hunter, who has attention issues himself, says, Hey, he was trying to get my attention because he was doing something in the block area. He wanted me to be fully present, have a conversation with him. And that convicted me right there of, I didn't need to have my phone out. It could wait. There was no emergency. And so that was a moment for me where God was speaking to me. I'll take out my phone sometimes to, I'm going to take pictures of an activity. Of course, that's a whole other conference about taking pictures. But I've realized that there are some things I need to do. So let me talk about those 5 ways. And then and then we'll talk about the kids. 5 ways of becoming less distracted. First of all, accept the reality and limits of technology. Technology is here. It has positive things. It has negative things. But the reality is here. For us to bury our heads in the sand and say we're not going to use technology at all would be would not be healthy. It would be negating all the positive things that we can use technology for in spreading the gospel. But we also need to know its limits. If technology is a tool to help us teach kids, it doesn't teach kids. We teach kids the Bible. That's the way God designed it. We can use technology, but we do it. Secondly, to become less distracted, you need to evaluate your own personal tech usage. You could take the internet addiction test, the official one is actually, pay for it, but you can go online. Not now, because you're not supposed to touch your phone. You can go online and look for an internet addiction quiz, and they're quick to take and just see. And there's a bunch of them. There's a pornography addiction. There's all these other kinds of ones. There's also a Facebook intensity quiz, just kind of fun to see. But it also helps you realize, okay, so maybe I am spending too much time. Maybe I am addicted. The third thing is, when you're in the classroom, establish some no-tech zones. And one way of doing that is say, I don't check my phone in the classroom. Just tell yourself that. That's one way that psychologists say that we can help break a habit. Just say, I don't. You tell yourself, tell the other teacher in the room, I don't check my phone in the classroom. Here's the interesting thing, is I teach with a millennial. She's a junior in college. I taught her when she was 3. Now she teaches with me, an adult. And she never has her phone, unless every now and then she might want to take a picture. She never has hers out. And she's a millennial. I'm an old man, and I'm the one that has problems with it. So, you know, it may be that I need to put my phone, over here on the cabinet so that I know where it is in case there's an emergency or something. But other than that, I don't, grab it. Also, learn how to use the Do Not Disturb feature on your phone. What that does is, if I have, like, family members, where if my phone is on silent, if I have it on Do Not Disturb, if a family member is listed, I'll do it on my phone. And if you don't know how to do this, just get, just get a second grader to do it for you. They can do it. But put it on there, and then if it's an emergency from a family member, it'll come through, and you'll hear it on your phone. But other than that, then your phone's not vibrating, and it's not ringing when you need to be teaching. Another thing is, enlist you a tech accountability partner. Maybe it's the other teacher in the room, and if they see you pull out your phone, they give you the look, then you put it back in your pocket. So those are 5 ways that we can become less distracted. Again, I don't think it's evil. Technology gives us efficiency and connectivity, but it doesn't give us contentment. It doesn't give us self-knowledge. It doesn't give us happiness. And guess what? It doesn't tell us who we are, only where we are. And this comes from the Smithsonian. This doesn't even come from a theologian. We could say it gives us everything, but it doesn't give us the joy that we have from Jesus Christ. So those are some things that we can do. But quickly, in our last 15 minutes, I want us to talk about how we can leverage kids' distractions in order to effectively teach the biblical truth. So first, we got to take care of number one. We got to become less distracted. But also, at the same time, realize kids are going to be distracted. How can we leverage that distraction? So, I didn't hear you, but I'm sure somebody moaned when they saw this. This summer at BBS, I was teaching children who just finished first grade. And my pastor has 4 children. At this point, let's see, they ranged in age from almost in kindergarten to just finished first grade to finished fourth grade to a teenager.
He's got four.
Two boys, the boys are the older ones, the girls are the younger ones. So I had the second youngest girl. She finished first grade. And we hadn't started the worship rally yet, so we hadn't started the morning yet. But the way we do it is that the parents bring their children and they bring them into our worship center, and that's where we do the handoff, the security stuff and all that. So I'm there with, in the worship center with other adults and kids, and so kids are kind of mingling around. We try to be in our area, because we have our own little pews and area to stand. But so Maddie is, pastor's daughter who just had finished first grade, and Luke, her brother, who had just finished fourth grade, has a fidget spinner. And Luke does have a lot of distraction issues. cool kid, but I mean, he's talking about he could never steal. I don't even think he's stealing when he's asleep. And so he had a fidget spinner, which is probably a good tool for him, maybe. But he brought it over there to where his sister was and got it caught in her long blonde hair. And then I'm not good with hair. And so the fidget spinner ended up tangled up in her hair, and then I couldn't get it out. And then so a female teacher came over, and she was able to kind of work it out. And I saw the pastor. And I normally don't tell on kids, but I saw their daddy over there standing, and I just asked him to come over there. And so, because I thought, he probably wants to deal with this issue a little bit. And so, anyway, he took the fidget spinner away. So I probably was the meanest teacher then. But I think sometimes our distraction, our things that we think will help us not be distracted, sometimes I think they make us more distracted. Think about the kids we're teaching. So the kids we're teaching are in Generation Z. They're born between 1996 and the year 2014. That makes up almost a quarter of the U.S. population. And they have never known a world without smartphones. I mean, I used to think it was sad that my kids didn't know what an 8-track tape was. The other day, I told you about the millennial who teaches with me. She's 21. And I said something about reel-to-reel tape. Just blank look. I mean, she's a smart girl, too. She didn't have a clue. So, if you talk about cassette tapes, they think you're old these days. But think about it. They've never known a world without the internet. They've never known a world without cell phones. For them, Google's always existed. They take Wi-Fi for granted. I mean, if they go somewhere and the Wi-Fi's down, it's awful. You would think it's Armageddon. Children younger than two, this came from 2014. 38% of children under 2 years old had used a mobile device. Phase four, 80% had used a mobile device. And the average age now for getting the first cell phone is 10.3 years old. Let's just say 10 to round it. There's all, we use it for our entertainment. Tablets, phones, DVDs, they're used, it used to be Nintendo DS. It's really gone down. When we're traveling, when we get in the minivan, immediately the electronics come on. That affects families and conversations. Look at kids in social media. And now, for one thing, social media is dangerous for kids. There's a reason that there's supposed to be age limits, but now Facebook Messenger came out with a very controversial thing, and it was announced in December. Messenger Kids. But here's what tech teaches our kids. I'm the center of my own universe. I deserve to be happy all the time. I must have choices. I am my own authority. Information is all I need. I don't need teachers. That's pretty scary. But that's true. You think about the children we teach, and this is what they are learning. I think we're losing something more personal, according to Jonathan C. Edwards, not the Jonathan Edwards from the 1700s. Are we losing something more personal, more important to who we are by chasing efficiency and accuracy over relational investment? Think about the last time that you actually listened to a child. Hopefully, it was not very long ago. Hopefully, it was for many of you last night. A little boy who's in my Sunday school class came up to me last night at Wednesday night supper and wanted to give me a hug. He said, "Mr. Landry, how many days until Sunday?" So I counted them for him, done for. And I said, "Are you excited about Sunday?" He said, "Yes." I said, "I am too." And then he said, "Well, I don't know if I'm going to wear my fancy clothes." Hey, this is in the gym, Wednesday night supper. If my nose had been in my smartphone, I would never have that relational encounter with Ben. Our smartphones change us. We get lonely. We get comfortable in secret vices. We lose meaning. We fear missing out. But, you know, FOMO, FOMO, you know what FOMO is, right? Fear of missing out. We become harsh to one another. We lose our place in time. And those are six that just got repeated. Sorry about that. Let me give you the other ones that aren't printed here. We are addicted to distraction. We ignore our flesh and blood. We crave immediate approval. We lose our literacy. We feed on the produced, and we become like what we like. So let's start leveraging kids' distractions, even though we acknowledge the reality of it. First of all, let's embrace technology, not condemn it. If we condemn it, we've lost the kids because it's so much of who they are. We can teach them the theology of technology, and there is a such thing, because we can remind them that their identity is in Jesus Christ. Their identity is not on how many likes and how many shares they receive. Their identity is in Christ, not in comparing to others. Excuse me. We need to use tech to love God and love others. Say, "Well, how do you do that?" Well, we don't want to, instead of succumbing to negative distractions, use it to help them understand that they can use tech to love God. They can use it to read their Bible. They can use it to share God's love with others in age-appropriate ways, and depending on their age. Establish ground rules for mobile devices at church for both teachers and kids. So you can have a ground rule of, it doesn't come out at all while you're in the classroom, or it may be we can use our phones at certain times to look up scripture, or we can use it to look up, depending on their age. Sometimes they're great tools for finding Bible tools, or for using our own technology to show maps, the Bible time, those kind of, there's things you can do, but establish ground rules early and then abide by them. But if you tell kids you can't take your phone out, then guess what? You can't take your phone out of your pocket. Incorporate family apps. Another great thing you can do is there's lots of family apps out there. You know, if you use Lifeway Ongoing Curriculum or Lifeway VBS, we have an app for each of those, Alliance and VBS. And you can use them in class sometimes. Again, it would be you guiding it. You don't just let kids use their phones, because you know what? They're going to be places you don't want them to go. Here's something. Use TV screens. Okay, that's something we can do. They're used to having distractions. Well, then let's put something on TV screen that we want them to be distracted by. A Bible story or an application kind of video that helps them. Or maybe just a picture. Maybe it's a Bible teaching picture. Maybe it's a map. Or use TV screens. Use technology to help teach. Photograph their learning in real time. Now, the asterisk there is to abide by your church's privacy rules, okay, and policy. present biblical truth and life application in terms of using sound bites, quotes, memes, short videos, engaging images, share squares, emojis. You can use all of those, even if you print them out or you put them on the screen like I did this meme that I made up, because that is me usually, squirrel. Build in time for interruptions. When they have questions, respond immediately. Because guess what? This is the generation that expects to know, hear, you know, get their answer right now. And if you don't build in time for interruptions, they're going to be frustrated. You're going to be frustrated. Build in that time so that you can respond quickly. And if you don't know the answer right then, you can say, you know what? We'll Google it later. We'll look at it later. And also, when they make a statement, allow for open discussion on the spot. If it's appropriate and they make a statement, allow time for open discussion. And again, depending on their age. And then 10, use your large group experiences to teach patience. In other words, the patience is, okay, I can't look at my phone right now. I may not be able to look it up right now. I may not be able to use my technology right now, but it helps them begin to learn delayed gratification some and patience. Again, I'm not saying take it away completely. What I'm saying is that it's here to stay. G.K. Chesterton, who is no longer with us, says a huge modern heresy is to alter the human soul to fit modern social conditions instead of altering modern social conditions to fit the human soul. And so what I'm saying is that we need to use these 10 practices above. We need to model appropriate use of technology so that we are using technology to spread the gospel, not to distract us from it. On the same day that the 5-year-old boy tried to get my attention in the box area, a 3-year-old boy in the same class, John Henry, commented, "I don't like him." He was talking about Jesus. Now, I don't know why he said that. He said, "I don't like him. Don't like Jesus. Maybe I will someday, but I don't like him yet." Now, kids say lots of things that are windows into their souls. And if I were distracted by my smartphone at that time, like I was in the bulk area, I wouldn't have had the opportunity to peer through the window of his little 3-year-old soul and to know, he did really mean that he doesn't love Jesus. But think about the theology of that. I don't like him, but maybe someday I will. Well, I have that opportunity to teach him, to love him, and to show him who Jesus is. So the next time you teach preschoolers or elementary kids, put the phone in your pocket, put it in your purse, put it on the cabinet. Remember the little book, "There's a Walk-It in My Pocket"? Well, put your phone in your pocket and focus on the relationship that you can have with those children. I'd like to pray for us. Father, I thank you for the opportunity we have to teach preschoolers and children, to lead others to teach preschoolers and children, and to train them, to train parents. Father, I pray that you will guard our hearts and our minds and protect us from the negative and evil things that can come out of uses of technology and digital technology, Father. But at the same time, Father, I pray that you will help us leverage that technology, the good things you've given us, to spread the gospel, to build relationships, to introduce kids to Jesus. In his name we pray. Amen.
That's it for this episode of Mr. Mark's Classroom.
We invite you to leave your questions or comments on the show notes at MrMark'sClassroom.com.
Until next time, remember, your ministry to children is a gift with eternal value.
So go and make it count.